The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
So the 10th of May, and finally we're allowed to travel between counties here in Ireland. We have increased capacity in public transport. You can sit on half of the seats now rather than just a quarter of them. Our galleries, museums and libraries have reopened. Non-essential retail is open by appointment. There's click and collect involved. Barbers and hairdressers have reopened again by appointment. We have outdoor meetings allowed. 3 households outdoors, 2 indoors if one has received the vaccine. Outdoor groups of 15. Resumption of religious worship, and more to come in the months ahead as we return to some form of normality. We're joined by Dr. Margaret Ann Harris, spokesperson for the World Health Organization. Thank you for joining us, Margaret Ann. What's your assessment of how Ireland has done, how we've performed since the turn of the year?
Good evening, Matt. Well, you've been through a difficult time. You've been through a very difficult time after that big surge, which I'm sure you're all aware was really very much due to a lot of mixing during the Christmas holiday period. So having achieved what you've achieved, and yes, indeed, you've brought your numbers right down, but remember, you still do have transmission. So now's the time to make the most of what you've achieved by every individual being aware of their risk and being aware of where the transmission is. And even though it's great that people say you can do this, you can do that, but think yourself, if you're feeling ill, even if you might want to go and get your hair cut, but don't do it that day because you might transmit, you may have the virus and you may transmit it to your hairdresser. So you still have to think in terms of what's my risk and how do I manage it well.
And how big do you reckon are the risks, even if it's outdoor meetings, if large groups start meeting up outdoors, maybe having a couple of drinks, having a barbecue, even if it isn't indoors, are there risks there that people perhaps might now be downplaying?
The risks are much lower outdoors. We've seen that most of the transmission is occurring indoors, particularly when you've got people mixing from different places, coming in mixing in a closed space with poor ventilation. That's when you're really most at risk. The other place, of course, we're seeing most transmission is actually in households. So that's, again, a member of the household's come back from maybe that social mixing in one of those closed spaces and brought it into the household. But certainly we haven't seen the big clusters when people are together outdoors, as long as they're not sort of bang on close. I mean, you could still be, if you're jam-packed outdoors, you're in just as much danger. But if you have your mixing and you enjoy it outdoors, it's a much safer situation.
You mentioned the disaster which hit us when we loosened the restrictions for last Christmas and then we got the surge of cases in January. Is the vaccination program going to make it different this time?
You certainly got 2 big advantages this time. You've got the vaccination. I think you've also got a population who really understands that you don't want to go back there to what you suffered in January. And actually, 3 big advantages. It's warmer weather, so you can do many more activities outdoors.
So some people associate the spread of the illness with the warmer weather, colder weather, but is it just strictly because people are outdoors rather than the actual temperature itself?
Exactly. The temperature affects our behaviours and makes us huddle indoors and makes us do most of our socialising in those closed, poorly ventilated spaces because they're much warmer spaces. But we also see in very, very hot countries, I mean, India at the moment, where we're seeing a horrific outbreak, is going also through a very hot period of time. And that also makes people go indoors because they want to get into a cooler space. So it is just behaviour.
OK, now we've been debating here earlier in the programme the use of antigen testing because our HSC and other official bodies appear very, very reluctant to allow the use of antigen testing and indeed have condemned attempts by supermarkets to sell antigen testing packs. What is the position of the World Health Organization on the use of antigen testing?
So we certainly say that the PCR, which is the test that's done in the lab, is the gold standard because it's more likely to give you the sort of the correct level of false positive and false negative. Now, the antigen testing can certainly be used, and it's often used as a way to identify somebody who may have the virus and then go on and do the PCR test.
So you see it as a stepping stone solution rather than you have a clear antigen test, you can go out and party.
Exactly right. So because it's not going to give you the hard and fast information. So it's, I know people are talking about like, oh, we'll take a test like brushing our teeth. We're not there. And again, even if you had a negative gold standard PCR test, if there's a concern that you could be infected, think very hard about whether you should be partying at all.
But then for even things like going to university or college, where we've had a situation where we've had a lockdown out of the universities and colleges, third level institutions here in Ireland, since March of last year. And there are a lot of students who want to get back to their place of study. Would there be a role for antigen testing perhaps in September, even if those people have or have not been vaccinated?
So certainly if you used antigen testing under those circumstances, again, think about what you're going to use it for and what your next step is. So indeed, if you use it to identify people that may be infected and then do the PCR test, that could be one strategy. But also think about what you're going to do to manage people. How are you going to help them to quarantine? How are you going to help them to self-isolate? Make sure you've got lots and lots of strategies for ensuring that if you do find that people are infected, how are you going to manage it to protect everybody else?
I want to ask you a little bit about vaccines. The World Health Organization has approved emergency use of a Chinese vaccine as well. Would you encourage countries to add to the existing supplies by importing this vaccine from China?
Well, certainly, when we give an emergency use listing, as we have done for the Sinopharm vaccine, it's after rigorous review of the efficacy, that is, does it work, the safety, does it have a good safety profile, and also the quality of manufacture. And if vaccines reach the standard in all those three things, they get the listing. So indeed, this means that we've now got, I'm looking at the numbers, six that we've listed, and there are actually 10 or 11 vaccines out there. And this does increase the supplies for the world. And when people ask me which vaccine should I take, I say the best vaccine's the one in your arm.
Indeed. Well, then there is the issue here in Ireland about use of particular vaccines. There's a discussion as to whether the J&J vaccine can be used for those in the age cohort of 45 to 50. At present, it's only the over 50s. What would the WHO position be in relation to individual vaccines that are available to us at present?
Yes, so certainly our recommendations on the J&J vaccine, and that's been reviewed by our strategic advisory group of experts, is that that's a suitable vaccine for anyone over the age of 18.
Anyone over the age of 18, and we're arguing about whether to give it to those over the age or under the age of 50. OK, and also it has been brought up earlier in the programme by Professor Kingston Mills, an immunologist at Trinity College, about the AstraZeneca vaccine. Certain concerns here in Ireland that there's a gap of 12 weeks between the first and second dose for those who've got it, mainly those in the 60 to 70 age group. And he's also worried about whether it is useful against the South African variant. Would the World Health Organization believe that the second shot that those people should get should be something different to the AstraZeneca vaccine?
So to date, we have not seen the data that gives us enough information to say whether you could mix the vaccines between the first and second dose. But with the AstraZeneca, we have seen that the delayed second dose is not harmful. It is, in fact, seems to increase the strength of the immune response in the second dose.
Even at 12 weeks?
I think it was 12 weeks. It was a longer period than originally expected. So I'd have to get back to you on the exact numbers. I'm sorry, I haven't got that in front of me.
Okay, I appreciate it's quite a specific question.
And yes, and I wouldn't want to give you an incorrect steer, but we certainly did find with the AstraZeneca, again, the strategic advisory group of experts looked at this and found that the delayed second dose was something that actually increased the immune response. And on the variants, we haven't seen any clear evidence of the variants being able to escape the the vaccines. And what we're seeing that's really important is all the vaccines are still able to prevent severe illness and death. And that's really, those are the top line things you want from these vaccines. You want them to stop, well, you want them to stop people from dying, clearly, but also you want to stop people from having to go to hospital for 3-4 weeks and be in intensive care and then overwhelm your health system.
Thank you very much, Margaret Ann Harris, spokesperson for the World Health Organization.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.